Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint.
This is Karina Hogan with Let's Talk.
And good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we are broadcasting from. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which you are taking this broadcast from and acknowledge elders past and present right across this beautiful nation. I'd also like to remind you that if you're listening to us through 98.9 FM on your radio, you can also listen to us through our app, 98.9 FM. So jump on your major platforms, download that, and you can listen to us live from that app. You can also upload the program a little bit later on in the day at 98.9fm.com.au. And we are streaming right across Australia, Monday to Thursday with Bo Gaines-Spiram. And then you get to finish the week off with me, Karina Hogan, here on Let's Talk on 98.9 FM. And today we are heading into what is usually considered bushfire season. And I thought that it would be a really great opportunity to catch up with the amazing Victor Stephenson, who is an Indigenous traditional cultural fire practitioner. He's written an amazing book that I think everyone should pick up called Fire Country. And he's got a few things on the boil at the moment. And I actually didn't realise that he is not only does he do the fire burning, the traditional fire burning stuff, but he also is a musician, filmmaker, writer. And he's actually got a song that he is releasing today. Well, not today, sorry. He's released recently that has a lot to do with the work that he does. And I thought that it would be great to get Victor on to have a chat here on 98.9 FM's Let's Talk. Good morning, Victor.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the program. It's great to have you on. I always love having a yarn with you about some of the amazing stuff that you do as far as fire is concerned particularly. But before we begin, can you tell us who your mob is and where you're from?
Yeah, I'm from North Queensland and my mob is Takalaka. And, yeah.
Deadly. And we are kind of heading into the fire season. How are you feeling at this time of the year? I wonder, this is something you've been doing for quite some time, and I wonder when this time kind of starts rolling around, I imagine that your receptors are kind of up and you sort of, I imagine, you know, feel like, I don't know, that there's a sense of concern or not. How are you feeling?
Well, you know, like this year we've had like some good rain in areas and like just in North Queensland here, we've had, you know, we just had rain just recently again, and which is really weird. We had a pretty good downpour in early September, which is really nice, nearly 100 mil in some areas in September. And the seasons are looking like we're going to get good wet season. And what they're saying on the weather as well with the Western view, they're saying they're predicting the same. So that's really great to see the water returning in many places, also in some of the southern areas. And I see a lot of green country in the beginning of this year going around the place, but that also is a lot of fuel there. And having said that, there will be some areas that probably didn't get as much rain that will, you know, be at risk with fire because, you know, people haven't been, you know, we still haven't got to the point of, you know, doing enough work looking after the land. And we haven't done any efforts to really get around the round table and talk about managing the land better. Mm. And, you know, I haven't seen any commitment from any agencies except for just really minor sort of, you know, gestures to try and get some sort of interest happening around the topic. But COVID has also come in and that's dampened a lot of spirits and stopped a lot of projects. But that hasn't stopped the communities from you know, calling in and organising and you know, and continue on to plan to look after that country into the future. Yeah.
And you're part of the Fire Sticks Alliance, which I want to talk about a little bit more in a second. But first, for people that don't know, let's just give people an idea, Victor, of what exactly a cultural fire practitioner is and what you do in that space.
Well, the idea is, you know, for Aboriginal fire management is, you know, looking after the land and to a much finer detail than just hazard reduction or just burning landscapes just to look after a house, you know, and the sake of just burning to throw a match. It's that right timing and ensuring that all those indicators for the different ecosystems are there for a healthy system. And when fire was burnt in the old times, it was done for food. It was done to the whole landscape was life and property, and so it's very, very you know, complex and layered, and it was applied in different three areas. It was implied by different people, whether it be in the sand country by women or it was by men, and so all the areas are different, of course. But there's so many layers to the fire and so many layers to the outcomes of that too, the benefits, whether they're cultural, to look after the, you know, the environment and get plenty of biodiversity so there's plenty of food in the landscape. Aboriginal people were masters of ecological burning, and that's where ecological burning come from, you know, that traditional knowledge. And, you know, and it's also, you know, ensuring that the landscape wasn't burnt to a cinder so that there was no resources. You know, so every time more people burn, they left a pattern in the landscape. And you know, it would burn some stuff and then it leave some stuff behind and create a pattern. But today when people burn, it burns black right through to the edges of the burn zone, and from leaving it too long and not really looking at the burning patterns as really delicate and burning more regularly, and like farming practices in a way, but without saying the word farming, but more like permaculture, really a next level sort of stuff, you know. So learning that stuff is learning all the trees, all the soils, and being on country all the time and knowing when to burn.
And nothing sits alone.
That's right. It's a whole other level of connection to landscape, and that's what Aboriginal people had on country, you know. Our mob did that, and teaching that again to people is the big task, you know, because it's a whole other you know, it's a knowledge system that was almost lost in a lot of places, you know.
And Bo and I spoke to you a little while ago, particularly after the 2019-2020 fires that absolutely ravaged the nation. And at that point, the Fire Sticks Alliance, which is a group or an organisation that brings together a whole range of cultural fire practitioners to manage the land, but also to partner with state, federal, local councils. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. The idea for Fire Sticks is a community-based non-for-profit organisation, and basically it's made up of community members all over Australia, different parts of Australia, not all over, but you know, in many parts of what we can afford and make happen. So that's, you know, all made up of community, and our aim is to firstly strengthen Aboriginal management and get Aboriginal people to manage their own land, and the reason for that is because of the opportunities around that with education, getting our young people their identity, you know, helping them out our social issues, as well as look after country, education. There's so many aspects to health and benefit rather than just hazard reduction in the Western view. And that's why we've got to fight for this, because it's really important for our mob and for the future. And, you know, and part of that then is then sharing that with the broader community and involving the broader community as well and being inclusive. And that's not just through on the ground with local farmers and just the Joe Blows on the country, but also with, you know, like the agencies as well. So we've partnered up with, different agencies, try and work with national parks, even though we fail in places, we'll knock on the door again and again and again until they get it. So we don't exclude anyone. We can be disappointed sometimes in the system, but we always strive to try and make it work in the end. But having said that, you know, focusing on the community aspirations first and just getting the job done regardless, you know.
Yeah, and you spoke about some of the challenges there as far as getting momentum and these partnerships you have with farmers and firefighters. I imagine that there are some challenges there as well. But what are some of the wins that you've had since, particularly in the more recent years? Because I believe that that Fire Sticks Alliance has grown exponentially over the last 2 to 3 years. So
yeah, since those wildfires, yeah, Fire Sticks has really taken off a lot, and you know, and it hasn't been around any government funding either. You know, it's all been philanthropy, community support, all outside support from actual government, and you know, which I'm a little bit disappointed because the government hasn't really come to the party properly on this subject. You know, and our aim is not to take government funding that's been announced for this for communities, because we don't want to be competitive with communities. We want communities to be able to take government funding, and so our role is to really try and find external support and dig deeper out there in the world to try and find other ways to resource this so that we can free up government funding for the communities and bring in more resources to this. And that's the whole role of Fire Stick, is to create more resources and help the community.
Is that on a federal and state level there, Victor?
What's that, sorry?
Is that on a state and federal level?
That's on all levels, you know, right across the board. And, you know, a lot of councils are coming on board too now, you know. And, like, you know, just to tell the truth, like, the councils and pastoralists and, you know, land care groups and other NRM groups and all those sort of, like, you know, water groups from city water enterprises and you know, whether it be in Victoria or New South Wales and all different areas, you know, there's women's programs happening.
Yeah.
Next one's in Tasmania.
I did hear about one up in Cairns.
You know? Yeah, yeah, all the momentum there, but all the momentum is on the community level, even those organisations I mentioned, where they're all like individual sort of institutions, you know, or, you know, organisations that are just running off government funding as well. Mm. But for the core of the government, you know, then they're not really budging much, and I haven't seen a lot of negotiation or talks happen with a lot of even the fire departments, and it's sort of all gone a bit quiet since those wildfires, and COVID has been a part of that as well, of course, but I
worry a little bit, Victor, because I can very clearly remember driving to the Melbourne airport about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and that smog that covered the whole of Melbourne as the nation lit up, essentially, and billions, not millions, billions of animals, you know, lost their lives, and this was this took over the country, and I guess my concern is that maybe that's faded away a little bit, and that there has been that momentum has been lost a little bit. But I see from a community level that I'm following you guys, that it is absolutely not ending for you guys, but from a government level, it needs to be supported. It needs to be supported at that federal, state, local level.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Like, you know, the kind of community level, it's just like, regardless of COVID, everyone's just been going forward and planning, like right at this very moment. And, you know, I'm leaving for Southern Queensland next week, and then you know, over to Tasmania, then, and then over to South Australia, to the areas that are allowing us to travel. So, you know, it's all lining up. Even in the north here, there's programs kicking off. You know, in central Queensland, other areas, and New South Wales and Victoria, they're all ready to roll, but we can't get in there right now, so they all got to sit tight. But you know, it's just going crazy, and to tell you the truth, if the COVID wasn't here, which I'm not blessing the COVID, no way, but if the COVID has really slowed us down a little bit, we would have been totally overwhelmed.
Totally.
Because we already are.
Well, there's such opportunity there, Victor. You spoke about, you know, the opportunity as a cultural fire practitioner to be able to create community and to work from an ecological perspective, but then there's also the social perspective. I know that you've definitely worked in the area of working with young fellas to try and foster culture within and build the capacity of young black fellas to build their confidence. Now, you are a cultural fire practitioner and you do a fantastic job. If you just joined us here at 98.9 FM, we're talking to Victor Stephenson, who, yes, as I said, is a cultural fire practitioner, but Unbeknownst to me, when I spoke to you yesterday, you're also a musician who is working and just started up this amazing site called The Living Knowledge Place, which, as I said, moves outside of that ecological, environmental side of things and moves into the social side of things. Tell me a bit about The Living Knowledge Place.
Well, The Living Knowledge Place has been a concept that sort of I've been working on over the through life, you know. I mean, it's always been there. I built the first sort of draft sort of version with a small team about 10 years ago, probably even a little bit more now, but I think hard. But yeah, so we've had that going, and that's currently there for people to look at now. But it's a site that based on traditional knowledge. Altogether, you know, and it goes right back to when I was in working with the old people and going into the schoolhouse and working with them to get this, you know, this knowledge to the kids, and you know, and that was the aspiration of the old people. They wanted the kids to get this knowledge and going down to the school, and it's the biggest sort of aspiration was that education side of things. And I think that's the same for all elders all over the world, you know, that they had that same aspiration for their knowledge to get passed down to those younger ones. So it is about education. And when you do talk about, like, the issue that we have at hand and, like, the healing that needs to happen to this country environmentally and socially, it's not something that's going to happen in 1 year. Like, you know, we can't just see it like a theme. You know, healing country is great, but at the end of the day, this problem is intergenerational. And you know, we've been tackling the governments and going to meetings and trying to get these governments and bureaucracy to change, and it's like hitting your head against a brick wall, and then you look behind and you see all the kids standing there and they're not being taught anything, you know, or not being taught much. There's not enough resources for them, and then you realize that, you know, like, I'm here for this life and I'm not going to waste my time banging my head against the wall. We need to, and just I sort it. Of realised that what the old people said was to pass it on to the kids. So we need to create that road for the little ones, and knowing that this is intergenerational, and that we need to ensure that the fight keeps going, you know, and the healing continues after, you know, we're all gone, you know, into the next generation.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I built Living Knowledge Places, to start that process and to create an education site that takes ownership by the whole community, by everyone, and, you know, and that way it's done by people being able to contact the community through the site as well, and you know, to give everyone an opportunity to put content on there, and that is based on environmental management to social, cooking, dance, everything, you know, the whole thing, and that's also teaching kids that holistic thinking and how everything is connected.
Holistic thinking.
That's what when I
speak to you and we talk about being a cultural fire practitioner and the work you do, I you know, it comes back to that holistic thing, you know. And if you want to check that website out, you can do so at livingknowledgeplace.com.au. That's livingknowledgeplace.com.au. Yeah. And when you jump on there, I love it. I love the way that it's all set out, and you've got a map there with people, games, food, music, dance, arts and craft, well-being, all in a circle around the map of Australia, or so-called Australia. And a whole range of other different things, sustainable farming, cultural heritage. And so for me, I just think when you talk about healing, like this year's theme for NAIDOC, for example, Healing Country, like this is the epitome of it, brother. You know, Are You Okay Day happened, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and there was this, you know, yarn about how do you ask mob, are you okay? Because, you know, you don't really kind of walk in and go, oh, hi, how are you? You know, like mob are sort of like, that they engage differently, you know, and I think what I'm saying is that this, like this type of stuff that you're doing, the fire stuff, you know, getting involved and, you know, being on country, it's almost like the well-being side of things comes hand in hand, you know, like, and it's a way to be able to address things like mental illness and stuff like that as well. It may seem way far off of what it means to be, what fire means, but I mean, this is bringing, reviving knowledge, this is reviving culture, this is looking after land, this is bringing mob together, this is saying that you as an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person have knowledge that you can offer to the country that you're in. You know, this is your space. It's to me the epitome of self-determination and autonomy. I think it's fantastic. Talk to me about your music.
That's really important.
Yeah.
Before I go on the music, I'll just say that the Living Knowledge Place is also just under construction now, so we're going to the next level of that, and so when we're finished that, it'll be working the way that I really want it to work. So I'll be launching that again with everyone and all the communities involved, and so looking forward to getting that out there soon, hopefully. Yeah.
I mean, it's somewhere that I would send. I would love to get my 7-year-old boy involved in. He absolutely loves animals. He loves going out into the country, and you know, he's a massive David Attenborough fan. You know, like this is something that I would love to see my son get involved in. You know, and connect with other mob and other people in the community.
That's right. Yeah, you know, and that's it. Like, the thing is that the traditional knowledge can fit in any aspect, though, into cooking, into food, into health, into well-being. You know, when we talk about all our bush foods and medicines, we're starting to talk about all the DNA and a lot of our mob, you know, in terms of all the different plants that people ate. And some people don't even like eating vegetables, but they don't realize that their DNA is actually plant food as well as animal. And, you know, and that's in the bush medicines and all the knowledge in the landscape. It tells you that. And so, you know, that feeds into nutrition, that feeds into health, it feeds into land management, it feeds into, you know, well-being and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, traditional knowledge can fit in every aspect of modern society, even and as far as law, even into, you know, architecture, you know. And so I'm really interested in the Living Knowledge Place to keep on developing that, to continue to demonstrate that.
I think it looks incredible.
Yeah, the fire is there now because it's so important. It's saying, you need to deal with me now, otherwise, you know, I'm going to cause havoc. So we've got to put our attention to fire, but, you know, it really is just the beginning to so many other avenues, and that's what I'm hoping to do with Fire Sticks, and, you know, having this really great having now coordinators out there and workshops happening without me. Because I really want to continue to blaze other areas and activate other areas for our mob to get into, you know.
Absolutely. And I'm just wondering, so you know how, you know, you were saying government have sort of not really come to the table. I worry that Mother Nature will come to the table and then they'll have no choice. And again, they'll be making comments about regrets that they've had around not managing the land properly, which is just an echo of what happened a year and a half ago. So if government was sitting in front of you right now and you were saying, I want you to avoid Mother Nature from having to teach another really horribly terrible lesson to our country, what exactly would you say to them right now?
Well, you know, we just need to get on with it, you know, and we need to, and let us demonstrate, faith in what we're already demonstrating, and then, you know, in terms of communities all over Australia contributing to this, and not just through the work that we're doing, but through other mediums as well, that, you know, as a collective, Indigenous Australia is really showing that, you know, we want to show a solution around this and give us a go, you know. We've already demonstrated over the years that we're able to do this. We've done burns all over the country. We've got projects and overseas happening as well. And, you know, we have a really good reputation, and yet still we're struggling for them to just say, well, here, show us what to do. But it's the other way around. The organisations like, you know, the fire services and government agencies, they want to control it. So they want to, you know, it's more about control for them rather than the solution. And that's a mindset problem. It's a sort of a mental illness, if you ask me. And we need to sort of work through that. And, you know, they're all the challenges that we have to work with and deal with. And so we take all that on board as well. But without it being the, you know, dampen our spirits. But, you know, on the other side of the coin, we don't abide by, you know, like, we won't just say no. We'll always try and make it happen, because if it doesn't happen, then it's not done our way to actually demonstrate it and to show how it works and to get everyone involved. And so we really need to get the practical happening. And that's the difference between government and Indigenous processes, is that the government is all the theory and, you know, doing all the talking and meetings and paperwork and to actually make something happen. But for us, we need to do the action to make something happen. It's a different way of educating and different way of demonstrating. And that means getting the land involved and showing, you know, the land is talking and showing the indicators and landscape, and the land has got a voice in as well. And that's also what Aboriginal negotiations is based on, involving the landscape. And that way the truth is there and the action is there and the result is there, and she's like, see, told you. Mm-hmm. And then we just go ahead and keep going. And by getting to that, you know, so it's two different worlds, you know, and you try and make that happen and as best way as possible. And the only way that I see that happening is not through force and not through conflict, but actually through trying, it's just having fun and just in involving everybody. And I think getting the kids involved is also fun. Mm. Getting all the community involved is fun, and so we just need to focus on kicking goals that way and giving people really good experiences, and that's how we've been doing it over the years. And yeah, don't lose sight of that Aboriginal way of doing things, you know.
Absolutely, I love that. That's like music to my ears. Before we get to your song "Great Land," and written by you, written and produced and sung by you, Victor.
And also with
Mulong, I should say.
A couple other local musos with me here: Aidan Brim from Zenith and Taurus Webb, and Merindy Schreiber, Cookie Allenji, and Nikki Doll as well. It's amazing professional singers, and Natalia Mann as well on the harp. There's just all local mob here and local artists that have, we just support each other, and so yeah, this is just
How long have you been doing music for, Victor?
I've been doing music since I was 16. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So, you know, like for every mob, you know, they're sitting on the fire, sing songs, and you know, Charlie Pride songs around the fire at night. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, that's how I learned. You know, and all the older generation sitting around, you know, singing country music around the campfire down the river. Everyone could play the guitar in Coranda up in here, North Queensland. And you know, you bring a guitar there, we all fight over it. You know.
I have to say, one of my favourite things to do is to travel up to Coranda. Is it the amphitheatre up there? It's probably, I would say, my favourite place to go and watch a show. I love it. I think it's just such a beautiful, peaceful place. And your music, your song "Great Land" by Mulong, which is your stage name, would you
artist
say?
Artist name, yeah.
Artist
name for many years now. And
is there a meaning behind it?
Through the film, it just means it means spirit. And it's basically like back in 2002, 2003, I think, when I started to actually make films and be a filmmaker, that was my label, my name. And so, you know, and it just continues on with the music and whatever, and so just sort of stay like that.
Well, it seems
it's a really hard thing to do, you know, naming something, it's really difficult.
It's so hardest.
It's really good, yeah, so it's good that I could just relied on the same old thing I've been doing, you know.
Well, talk to me about this song "Great Land" that you've recently released, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, "Great Land," I wrote "Great Land" after those bushfires in it was around 2020, and you know, and about March or something like that, the bushfires were just starting to ease a bit. I was sitting there, and you know, just done Fire Country. I published Fire Country as well, and I was sitting there sort of bewildered, just thinking about all the stuff that was going on in the world, and in our country, and I, not just with the events, but also with the response of what people were, you know, it was incredible. The whole world was looking in it, and people were talking about Aboriginal land management and supporting communities to do this work, and communities were all riled up, you know, white and black, and trying to do something and motivation to change. And so I wrote "Great Land" as a feeling and emotion I got from that, and in a sense of, this is something inspiring, you know. Out of all this darkness is all this inspiration and people, like hope and change and motivation, all this sort of passion sort of ignited amongst the darkness, and and I harness that and develop great land, you know, to try and share that.
That's amazing.
To motivate our mob and to lift people's spirits in a way, you know.
And yeah, I think that you do that in so many different ways, Victor. It's been fantastic having you on and learning this side of you as an artist, but also as an educator for young mob. I think it's incredible what you're doing, and I think that it has the ability to be able to do a whole range of things for mob on a range of different levels, you know. And if you want to donate to Fire Sticks, I encourage you to do so. As we mentioned, they don't rely on very much funding or funding at all. Is that right, Victor?
Yeah, well, at the moment we're blessed with philanthropy funding, which is really great. And so that's fantastic, and that's what we'll continue to build those relationships. Mm. But yeah, what I said earlier.
Well, if you're a philanthropist out there and you're listening, because I know lots of rich, rich, rich old white men listen to me. No jokes. But jump on here and chuck in about, you know, a couple of million. No. But seriously, I think, mob, get on here. If you're going to donate anything, I'm about to donate $20 to firesticks.org.au. Lucky it's payday, brother. chuck in my $20. But if you can, get on there, put in $5, $10. But also, like, they've got a whole range of different stuff that you can look at. Like, there was a virtual conference that I got to see last year, which I thought was so very interesting, particularly the part dedicated to, I think it was Rachel Kavanagh did a bit about women and the history fire, being a cultural fire practitioner and so on. So you can jump on and look at that. There's a whole range of stuff.
We've also got, like, Dan Morgan down in the South Coast down there, New South Wales, and he's doing some youth programs there, and he's got trainee Ado down there with him that's just been put on, and there's also Leighton.
Oh, Leighton Lee. As well. He's incredible he's from amazing. Up at Mount Tambourine there.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So he only lives in Mount Tambourine, but he works in different regions and helps different communities there, and that's the whole idea, see, and just building on that employment, and that's where all the donations go. It goes into the wages and to create more employment, and that's one of the things I want to see Fire Sticks do, is just keep creating jobs, and not jobs that are Fire Sticks controlled, but jobs that the communities control.
That's so right, yes.
All the positions are community-based positions. They all work from their own regions, and they're there to drive their own regions and to and get their own mob on their own feet.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, really this is a perfect example of self-determination and autonomy in my mind, especially from a cultural perspective, you know, reviving culture and putting it where it's needed, but then also it not being completely separated from anything. It's holistic.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure to talk
from that. Staying away from that Western structure, you know, and not to dampen Western structures, you know, but just to stay away from that structure of CEO and boss. So our organisation, Fire Sticks runs through shared leadership, so we're all equal, you know, and we listen to all the communities, and we don't say, oh yeah, I'm the CEO, I'm this and that, and that is just doesn't work for our mob, you know. And so
and also, let's be honest, it's not very sustainable, really, is it? It's not sustainable. I mean,
well, it's gammon, you know.
It is.
I mean, it's all ego, and you know, it's all like people in position of power without being acknowledged, you know. And that's the Western construct. Like, someone can come in here next day and be the boss and they're no good, you know?
That's right, yes.
So it needs to be family. It needs to be community.
But also, I think,
connection and, you know?
Like, understanding.
Laugh and get along with each other. And we need to respect each other, and we need to have a shared leadership. So if
and understanding the value in kinship too, hey, like, you know? And that community-based approach rather than that hierarchical approach, which is not very sustainable. I mean,
I mean, you know, shared leadership works like this. I mean, you know, like just recently I saw, on the news there, you know, a white fellow, a white man who was in power of the government talk about women's issues.
Yeah, right.
And I just went, and for us, like, we'll be like, No, the women got to talk about that, not the man in charge.
Right, you know what I mean? Right. Well, what are we talking about? Are we talking about the same person that was the Indigenous Indigenous Minister for Indigenous Affairs and Women. Are we talking about Tony Abbott? I don't know.
I think you can pull out a few examples there.
Yeah, right.
There's even one in America that's doing that, and one in Australia. All that Western construct.
I think there's a lot of people that can learn from what you're doing, Victor, from what Firesticks Alliance is doing, and from the work that you're doing also on your website as well. Thank you so much for joining us here today. I'm going to play your amazing song, Great Land. And after the break, I'm going to give you a little sneak peek into Indigenous Business Month, because that's coming up and I'm quite excited. So for the whole month, I'm going to be dedicating every single Friday to Indigenous Business Month. And I'm going to speak to a mother who is doing just that down south. Victor, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for coming on. I want to know more about it. I want to get involved. I want to get my boy involved, and even my girl as well. Yes, and I hope that this fire season is as good as it possibly can be.
Yeah, same.
All right, thank you. Looking forward, Indigenous Business Month is just around the corner. So 2 weeks from today, I am going to kick off Indigenous Business Month, and we're going to spend an entire month every Friday talking business. So I would like to bring light to some amazing Indigenous businesses throughout Australia, some that have lived through the test of COVID, some who have failed, come back again, some who have just done unbelievable in various different spaces. I'm hoping to, you know, have chats with people. This time last year, we were chatting with Dwayne Good, who had a travel agency and business, and at the time had faced incredible challenges. So hopefully we'll be able to catch up with him, other people throughout the month, who, and encourage you mob to wear black, buy black, hear black, listen black, everything black, because I think it's incredibly important. So I wanted to give a bit of a sneak peek. I know it's a bit early, but I always look for an opportunity to be able to put a deadly Indigenous business on the map. So we are chatting today with a mother, a brand new mother, might I add, down on Bundjalung country. Her name's Bianca Monningham. Good morning, Bianca.
Morganda, good morning. How are you?
Morganda.
Morganda.
Can you tell me who your mob is and where you're from?
Yeah, so I'm Bundjalung, proud Bundjalung woman from Whirlabool. We're from a small Aboriginal community, Bayugle, and I currently live in town in Grafton on the mighty Clarence River.
And I know I'm a bit early, but Indigenous Business Month is coming around the corner, and I saw an amazing video of you talking about your country down there, Bundjalung country, and off the back of the fires, which actually is what kind of got me thinking about it. And then I saw that you have this amazing business that you're running. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so Jana Bullen, which means stand together, the Aboriginal business here on Bundjalung country. We make all our own clothing and for kids and for adults, and nursery items like sheets and things for their bedspreads and stuff like that. And then I also sell my own art and weaving items and stuff from the website. So, yeah.
Can we spell your business name?
Yeah, so it's JANABULAN.
I just always love to bring attention to businesses, especially you as a mum of three, brand new mum.
So we got 10, 6 and 3 months old.
Oh, see, and is it difficult going from 2 to 3? I have 2.
Yeah, no, look, it's easy, sis. Go again.
Go
it's
on
easy.
Then.
The third one's, yeah, go again. Go on. Third
give,
one's a
I'll
dream.
Give you my man's number then. You can let him know.
tell him. Yeah.
You sell some really good jumpsuits and stuff on there. I've got a new niece that was due to come out on the 8th of September. So I've just jumped on here to support this business. Sis, what are some of the challenges that you've faced as a mother of three?
You're
having your own business.
It's having your own business is different to working for someone, because having your own business is 24/7, because you want to succeed. So you sort of do everything you know, for that business. You go to work for someone else, you work 9 to 5 or whatnot, you come home and that's the end of it. And you're constantly thinking about your business, and it's juggling the kids and their priorities of sport and stuff with, you know, doing your own stuff. So, yeah, it's just a juggling act, really. I've got that black business, but I've got another black business as well. So,
oh, I didn't know this. Tell me about
it. Yeah, so I got two. So I do that when I'm at home, and then I've got Bundjalung Cultural Experience. So throughout the day, we've got a company that goes into schools and does educational programs around Bundjalung culture. So, yeah, it's a pretty big juggling act at the moment, especially with the newborn. But I think when you're passionate
old,
about...
Actually, proper newborn.
She proper new. Yep, she's fresh.
Yeah, I was listening to her yesterday when I was talking to you, and it, do you know, like, it just makes you, like, for me, every time I hear a little baby's voice, it just makes me go,
oh. Yeah, they
more,
are beautiful.
Just one more, yeah, just one more.
Yeah, yeah. So third one's easy. They just fit in.
Oh, well, there you go, see? So those are some of the challenges, but... You know, what has it done for you as far as like, building you up and giving you, this capability of being able to make choices? Like, what are some of the...
Yeah. I think, especially when you're a mum, you know, if you got to leave the kids to, you know, go to work and stuff, you want to make sure that it's work that's meaningful, if possible, you know what I mean? Like, you want to feel like you're making a difference or feel like you're filling your own sort of cup up, you know? Mm. So, having both those businesses, you know, it makes you feel good. You know, I don't feel like I'm going to work, even with the cultural stuff. You know, sometimes we can get really, really busy and it's a lot of hours and sort of stuff like that, but it makes you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, you're sharing your culture, you're making sure our culture's staying alive. Like when you're with all them other little kids who are excited to learn about their culture, it makes you feel really good inside. You know, and same with... Jana Bullen, you know, it's always that creative side. So, yeah, it just makes you feel really good. And, you know, creating art and weaving pieces, it doesn't feel like work. It's you know, something that you're doing for yourself to sort of express yourself and things like that. So, no, it's good. It's not work at all.
Well, I really wanted to give our audience a little bit of a sneak peek into some a deadly Indigenous business, because Indigenous Business Month is coming around. So I encourage everyone to jump on and buy black, hear black, listen black, see black, whatever it is that you can do to get involved. Is there somewhere that people can go to look at your Bundjalung cultural experiences?
Yeah, so both businesses are on Facebook, Instagram, and they both have a website as well. Mm-hmm. So just Google it and both of them will come up and you'll be able to find the website for the Instagram and Facebook pages.
What does Jana Bullen mean?
It means stand together. So for me, you know, our stuff is, you know, for non-Indigenous people too, you know. They're part of this country. I want them to wear our clothes and wear the shirts that we create as well. And, you know, there's big conversations around being a good ally and, you know, standing with us. You know, there's no better way than supporting our black businesses and wearing a shirt and being proud of, you know, your First Nations people in this country.
That's solid. Bianca, it's been lovely to meet you, and I... look forward to buying some of this stuff and giving it out. I know my partner's got a new little nephew out there, and I've got a new little niece that's just taken her good old time. But I'll be jumping on here today and grabbing some of the products here on Jana Bullen. So thank you so much for joining us here on 98.9 FM.
Deadly. Thank you, sis. Thanks for having us.
No worries. And that was Bianca Monningham, and she runs the business Jana Bullen, and she is from Bundjalung country and a new, brand new mother. And I just wanted to give you a bit of a sneak peek into some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about throughout Indigenous Business Month, which is coming up in October for the whole month. There's going to be 5 Fridays dedicated to talking about business. I want to get into some real good hearty conversations around how it is that we're building capacity of black fellas and why business is such an important component of making sure that we can, you know, be our own bosses, that we can do our own thing. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here on 98.9 FM. If you've enjoyed the chat, you can go to 98.9fm.com.au